Hey, welcome back to my regular listeners and to all the new listeners. I am Tammy, and this is Women Committing Crimes. We took a brief month hiatus to make some changes and record some episodes, and now we are back. I hope you like the new changes. For those of you who are new and started here with this season, it's a great place to start. Actually, anywhere is a great place to start. One change that I know my regular listeners will notice is the intro music. I'm still using the amazing music of Byron Alexander, but instead of using the instrumental version of Very Well I Know, I'm using an edited version of Forgive Me from the same album. That's Byron's Square One album, album named Square One, which you can get off Amazon, Spotify, iTunes. He has a YouTube channel, etc. Also, I've added more sound effects and music within the podcast just to vamp it up a bit. Hope you like those. I have also added a new segment called PS, Postscript, in which I'll give updates or corrections or any news about any of the women we talk about. Also, I've added a feedback section so I can read your emails, comments, suggestions, etc. And if you like, or preferably love, this podcast, please give it 5 stars on iTunes, Apple Podcast, and give me some feedback in the comments sections. The ratings on podcasting sites helps this podcast get more exposure and makes it more popular. All right. I hope you enjoy, and I hope you are able to get caught up on season one and are ready for the new season. So let's start that PS section. I have some postscripts about Elizabeth Holmes, which seems to be our most popular woman committing a crime we've talked about. She has 282 plays. She is episode 18 in season one. Anyway, her trial has been delayed 3 times due to the pandemic and the fact that she was pregnant and is now scheduled, and her trial is now scheduled for August 31st. She was supposed to have her baby this month, but I haven't heard any information yet. She does face the possibility of 20 years in prison and a $2.75 million fine for fraud. So we'll see, right? All right, now for the feedback section. I have an email at womencommittingcrimes.com from Mia. I think that's right. M-I-A, Mia, Maya, from Chicago, Illinois. She says, "Hi, I want to say I love your podcast. I listen to it on my way home. It helps my nerves while I'm in traffic." That's good to hear. "I love the history and tidbits you add for background and context. It makes it much more meaty. If you can you do an episode about Lorena Bobbitt, the woman who cut off her husband's junk?" All right, thanks, Mia, for your feedback, and hell yes, thanks to your suggestion, I'll talk about Lorena today for episode 1 of season 2. Ah, 1993. That's our Wayback Machine, by the way. Not our Wayback Machine, it's our time machine. Going back to 1993, Whitney Houston was on top with the number one hit, a remake of Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You. It's the song from the movie The Bodyguard, which I hear rumors they might be remaking that. Because for some reason, Hollywood sucks now and can't come up with anything new. Anyway, Janet Jackson had a hit with That's the Way Love Goes. Tupac was still alive, and they were in the movie Poetic Justice together. I love that movie. The Dallas Cowboys were on top and actually won a Super Bowl again. Not like now, but they did 2 or 3 times in a row back then. And a young immigrant woman stole the headlines by doing what many women secretly have wanted to do for ages. She cut off her abusive husband's penis. That was our new sound for getting started, that Chinese gong. So this is where the meat of the podcast comes in. Lorena Leonor Gallo was born in Ecuador in 1969. Ecuador, or the Republic of Ecuador, is a country in the northwestern part of South America. It is bordered by Colombia to its north and Peru to its south and east. Ecuador also claims the Galapagos Islands, which for some reason I did not know that. I don't know why I did not know that. All right, so the very brief history. The Incas took control of the area in the 1400 CE. The Spanish took control in 1534 after defeating the Inca. Then Ecuador gained independence from Spain in 1822 when most of South America was pulling away from its colonial past. It became part of a larger group of countries called Gran Colombia under Simón Bolívar. Gran Colombia consisted of Colombia, Panama, Ecuador, and Venezuela. It was to be modeled after the United States, but broke up with each of those countries becoming independent right around the same time. Ecuador and the others became independent in 1830. There was a dispute with Peru, with Ecuador over borders, and that lasted until 1999. But during the 70s, it was under military rule, but is now currently a republic. Lorena actually grew up in Caracas, the capital of Venezuela. Venezuela, as mentioned before, was also part of the Gran Colombia, became independent in 1830. In the early years, it was a democracy, especially when Lorena was raised there, but has been under a series of dictatorships and military governments since, and as of now is an extreme socialist country. Venezuela's in the news all the time. The economy and living conditions in Venezuela now are terrible. According to the website humanrightswatch.org, quote, Venezuela is facing a severe humanitarian emergency, with millions unable to access basic health care and adequate nutrition. Limited access to safe water and homes and health care centers has contributed to the spread of COVID-19. In September, a fact-finding mission appointed by the United Nations Human Rights Council, HRC, found high-level authorities responsible for atrocities that they believed amounted to crimes against humanity. The government of Nicolas Maduro and its security forces are responsible for extrajudicial executions and short-term forced disappearances, and have jailed opponents, prosecuted civilians in military courts, tortured detainees, and cracked down on protesters. They used a state of emergency implemented in response to COVID-19 as an excuse to punish dissent and intensify their control over the population. End quote. Venezuela is part of OPEC, the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, that was founded in 1960 in Baghdad. Its current headquarters, though, is in Austria. Venezuela is one of the first founding members of OPEC. OPEC's mission is, quote, to coordinate and unify the petroleum policies of its member countries and ensure the stabilization of oil markets in order to secure an efficient economic and regular supply of petroleum to consumers, a steady income to producers, and a fair return on capital for those investing in the petroleum industry, end quote. It's considered more like an oil cartel in that it operates to reduce market competition, but one whose consultations are protected by the doctrine of state immunity under international law. Well, Lorena did not grow up during that part. She was already in the States by then. But that's the current situation with Venezuela. Well, Lorena had two siblings. Her father was a dental technician. There's nothing about her mom. I always try to find that kind of stuff, but I didn't find anything about that. In 1985 or so, her parents took her to the United States as a quinceañera present, and she fell in love with the United States. Quinceañera is a celebration of a girl turning 15 in Hispanic culture. It has mostly, I think, Mexican roots. And there's different ways that different Hispanic cultures celebrate this. You can kind of equate it to like a bat or bar mitzvah or a sweet 16 party, those kind of things. I have worked with a lot of Hispanic students before and have been invited to several quinceañeras. And, of course, you know, saw pictures and heard about the parties and stuff, and it's just absolutely amazing what these, you know, parties are like. The girls, the quinceañera, the girl dresses in these extravagant gowns. I mean, she picks it out, and they're beautiful. They're like wedding gowns almost, but different colors, right? And it's a party for her. This was traditionally, you know, when a girl became a woman, she was taught things to be a bride, things to be a mother, things to be a wife, that kind of stuff. Now I think it is more like a sweet 16 kind of thing. That's how it was described to me anyway. So for her quinceañera, Lorena went to the United States. And she did. She fell in love with it. So by 1987, when she graduated, she and I are the same age, Lorena obtained a student visa to go to college in the United States and worked as a nanny to make ends meet. She eventually worked at and became manager of a nail salon. In 1988, Lorena met John Wayne Bobbitt at a USO club. At the time, Bobbitt was a Marine, and Lorena lived in Virginia. They met in Virginia and went to the local community college. Lorena said, quote, I thought John was very handsome, blue eyes, a man in uniform, you know? He was almost like a symbol, a Marine fighting for the country. I believed in this beautiful country. I was swept off my feet. I wanted my American dream, end quote. They got married June 18th, 1989. And I think for a lot of maybe women or even men, you know, somebody in the military kind of represents part of the American dream. And I think, you know, people in the military, especially, you know, further back you go, are given a certain persona. But things did take a bad turn shortly after the marriage. Lorena said that John became violent a few weeks after the wedding. He first hit her when she criticized his driving, coming home from a bar. She said he abused and raped her throughout their short marriage and had forced her to have an abortion. Unfortunately, marital rape was not considered against the law in most states. In the United States, I mean, the first conviction for it was in 1979. And for some of you that are younger, that seems forever ago. But for those of us, you know, I'm 52, and 79 does not seem that long ago. I was 10. So it was during my lifetime. This is ridiculous. Most states had marital rape exceptions, meaning, you know, a woman could be, is raped, but those exceptions were like, well, if he didn't beat her, if there's no physical proof, if you're married, these exceptions, like if you married, evidently you agreed to have sex with your husband. He had rights as a husband, and if you're his wife, he can have sex with you, even if you don't want to, because by signing that marriage contract, so on. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, more than 50% of female victims of rape report being assaulted by their partner. That's important for this episode, by the way. If you've only heard of Lorena Bobbitt in jokes and popular culture and stuff like that, I'm hoping this kind of opens your eyes to something that is very serious, and, you know, for the reasons why she did what she did. John left the Marines in 1991, and Lorena's work at the nail salon was their main source of income, since John did not have a job and didn't seem inclined to get one. She often stole from her employer to make ends meet. The relationship was getting worse. The police were called on multiple occasions. In 1991, John pled guilty to assault and battery. He went through counseling and the charges were dropped. They were officially separated in October 1991, but were reunited in 1992. So, they have a terrible history, right? Their marriage sucks. They've only been married about three years or so. Let's get to 1993. It was shortly after their fourth anniversary, June 23rd, 1993. John came home drunk and raped Lorena. She said he passed out and she went to the kitchen to get a drink of water, saw a butcher knife, picked it up, went to the bedroom, and cut his penis off. She ran and got in the car and drove away. As she was driving down the road, she threw the penis out the window into a field. She said, quote, I tried to drive the car, obviously, but I had this thing in my hand, so I couldn't drive, so I got rid of it, end quote. She drove to a friend's house, who convinced Lorena to call the police. She did, told them what she had done and where to find the penis. The police find the penis after searching in the field, which neighbors said was actually kind of, or people, you know, that lived around there. So it was really kind of weird. They find it, they put it in plastic, I mean, it's just, it's weird. On the news, they actually showed that too. I remember this, watching the news. I mean, it was kind of weird at first, I'll be honest, with this situation. So, you know, you see all the cops searching in this field and they find it, like I said, put it in a plastic bag. Doctors were able to reattach it, and we'll come back to that kind of stuff in a minute. Jumping to November 1993, John Bobbitt is arrested and put on trial for marital sexual assault. But according to Virginia law at the time, which pisses me the fuck off, couples had to be living separately. Like they would have to be living separately and he would have to go to her house and rape her. Or serious injuries must occur for a charge of marital rape, meaning he would have had to beat her or something. So he was not put in jail, which I think is a whole bunch of horse shit. I don't know where those, is it just the patriarchy? Is it a religious thing? Well, we'll get to that again later. 1994, Lorena's trial. She is charged with malicious wounding, which has a sentence of up to 20 years in prison or deportation. She is an immigrant. She testified to the abuse and rape in her marriage. The defense said she had been pushed to temporary insanity and, quote, irresistible impulse, end quote. John denied all the abuse when he testified. Of course he did. Witnesses said that Lorena appeared to often have bruises, like people she worked with, friends of theirs, said that she often had bruises on her, and some said they had actually seen John shove her on several occasions. John's friends even testified that he liked forced sex, you know, meaning he liked that whole, you know, rape type situation. Of course, this was a media bonanza. I mean, woman cuts off, you know, husband's dick. This is a media bonanza. It was everywhere. I remember it was on all the news all the time. Lorena said, quote, "They always focused on it," meaning the penis, "and it's like they all missed or didn't care why I did what I did," end quote. Outside the courthouse, there were vendors selling hot dogs. Now, this is in Manassas, Virginia. So they're outside the courthouse, vendors selling hot dogs with sliced soda, get it? T-shirts were made that said Manassas, a cut above the rest. It was all over TV, on the radio, pop culture. I mean, stand-up comics doing stuff, right? Talk show hosts making jokes and that kind of stuff also. So let's talk about the results of the trial. Lorena was found not guilty due to temporary insanity. She served no prison time but spent 45 days in the hospital for a psych evaluation. Lorena became a citizen in 1994, and their divorce, hers and John's, was final in 1995. Thank God. Lorena decided to stay in Manassas, Virginia. She was later asked why by the New York Times in 2019, and she said, quote, "I lived here. This is my home. Why should he have the last laugh?" End quote. Exactly. Why should that asshole have any say? Why should she be the one to run away? She attended Northern Virginia Community College after she left the hospital. She worked as a cosmetologist, an administrative assistant, and a real estate agent over the years. Lorena said, quote, "When I finished with the trial, in the beginning, geez, I couldn't even go to the grocery store because people would say, 'Oh my God, you know what? I know you.' I just wanted to put my groceries down and go home. I just wanted to take care of myself and my family, you know, just to integrate myself into normalcy and a normal life," end quote. Of course. Of course, you know, people are going to be like, "Oh, I know who you are," that kind of stuff, which is really, you know, she's a victim. Yes, he's a victim of her cutting his dick off, but she's a victim of so much more. Eventually, in 2007, she founded the Lorena Gallo Foundation and Lorena's Red Wagon to help victims of domestic violence and their children. She met David Bellinger at the community college, and they had a daughter, Olivia, in 2005. There is a 2019 documentary called Lorena. There's a bunch of stuff out there, by the way, about this, obviously, because, you know, by the late 1980s, well, actually by the early 1990s, we're close to the launch of the World Wide Web for everybody. And, of course, this gets circulated so much. Books are written about it. This documentary came out, like I said, in 2019. But it focused more on the severed penis than it did the domestic abuse, which was not did not make Lorena very happy. In 2020, though, there's the biopic called I Was Lorena Bobbitt. That came out, and Lorena is the executive producer and narrator of this. So what about John? Well, they did reattach his penis. Good for him. Then, in the 1990s, he did two pornographic films, one called John Wayne Bobbitt, Uncut, in 1994, and Frankenpenis in 1995. Stellar. Also in 1994, he is charged with hitting Christina Elliott, an exotic dancer he was dating. He was convicted of battery and spent, this kills me, 15 days in jail. Then in 1998, he appeared on World Wrestling Federation on Monday Night Raw as War, as Val Venus. He then moved to Las Vegas, where he worked as a bartender, a limo driver, a mover, a pizza delivery person, then a tow truck operator over the years. In 1999, I think, he got probation for the robbery of a store. In 2003, he was sentenced to prison for violating probation after being arrested for battery of his wife at the time, Joanna Farrell. In 2004, he was arrested two more times for battery of Joanna. And then they finally filed for divorce. In 2014, he broke his neck in a car accident, drunk driving, from what I understand, and has been living off disability ever since. Stellar citizen, right? So one has to ask, did all this happen because he got his dick cut off? I'm hoping that a man who is only the victim of some crazy bitch and got his dick cut off, right, would have a different past after that, right? You would think. But if you're already a drunk douchebag, maybe that's, you know, this is how it would have turned out anyway. Like, if she would have thought that she could leave him before this and so on, you know, it seems like his life still would have ended up kind of, you know, like this, actually. I want to go back to the domestic abuse part of this episode. Domestic and sexual abuse in marriage is more prevalent than most people realize, and back then, again, it wasn't as talked about as it is now. And it's kind of like almost a silent crime, right? Kind of like child abuse also. People know about it, but especially back then, it especially the whole marital rape part, it wasn't talked about as much. Why? You know, why do women stay? That's always the question, right? Here's some reasons why. This is not an exhaustive list, okay? Just know that here's some reasons why. Sometimes people don't believe a woman when she makes the claims of domestic abuse, especially when she makes claim of marital rape, especially due to being part of, like, if she's part of some religion, which says a wife's duty is to let a husband do what he wants with her, right? Because patriarchy sucks, by the way. But sometimes people don't believe her. You know, you go and you say, my husband raped me. It's like, oh, it's part of marriage. Sometimes the woman feels guilty because if the man goes to jail, that breaks up the family, right? Can break up the home. Sometimes she feels that she has no place to turn if she has no family or friends. Sometimes, and this is probably a lot, the abuser threatens her or if there's children involved, right? Luckily for Lorena, there was no children. I'll be honest with you. I'm happy for her that she had no children with John Wayne Bobbitt. Girls, women, you have sex with him and you have a child, you are still connected to him no matter what, somehow. Sometimes she has no money to be able to leave. I myself have been the victim of domestic abuse with my first marriage. Not the one I'm in now. The one I'm in now is pretty virtually perfect. But the first one. Most of the above reasons were reasons I did not leave, with the exception I did have family. And when I was finally fed up, no, I didn't cut his dick off. Did it cross my mind? I'm not saying. But I did have family who did believe me and did help me, and I was able to leave. I was lucky. But Lorena's case also has a special rider to it. Lorena said, quote, as an immigrant woman, I was often too scared to call the police for help. My abusive husband always threatened that he could have the police detain me and have me deported back to my country, end quote. So that's another thing. If you are, you know, here on a visa, that kind of stuff, you might be afraid that they'll just deport you, right? Oh, okay, fine. Then we'll just deport you and solve the problem that way, right? Or that person who's abusing you could lie and say that, you know, you're the abuser, because women do abuse men. And by the way, when I talk about this, yes, patriarchy sucks. It sucks for some men too. And to let you know, if you are a man who's being abused and you are listening to this, please listen to this as well, okay? This does apply to you as well. There are men who are not necessarily sexually abused. Maybe they are. But as far as domestic abuse, yes, there are some. But I want to say thanks to Lorena Bobbitt, there is more awareness of domestic abuse, because even after all the jokes and stuff, there was still that underlying domestic abuse. Sherry Hamby, founding editor of the American Psychological Association journal called Psychology of Violence, said, quote, one of the results of the Bobbitt case is that people began to understand the role of sexual violence and psychological abuse plays in domestic violence. 25 years ago, the focus was still on the physical assault, end quote. Lorena even said about all the pop culture joke references, quote, I'll put myself through the jokes and everything as long as I can shine a light on domestic violence and sexual assault and marital rape, end quote. Right on, Lorena. Please pay attention. The National Domestic Abuse Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. Or the TTY is 1-800-787-3224. Or the website, it's thehotline.org. If you go to the website, they will show you how to erase their website, that search, from your hard drive or whatever, so an abuser will not know you went to it. Keep safe, please. Please reach out. Lorena Bobbitt, a woman justifiably, in my opinion, committing a crime. Whew. All right. I want to thank my wonderful and loving husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter, No Filter, and a new podcast I'm coming out with called Secret Spy Sisters. I'll explain that one in a little bit. Off Kilter, No Filter is a podcast with me and Byron Alexander, where we discuss everything and anything, literally. Like, we went on a hiatus also, but we'll be back this week, August 5th, with the topic road trips, like family road trips and stuff like that. It's fun. Also, yesterday, August 2nd, my other podcast that I talked about a second ago, Secret Spy Sisters, debuted. It's a podcast about women spies throughout all periods of history and around the globe. There's a whole lot from World War II and the Cold War, of course, but there are some that date really far back in history. So come and listen to all these podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcast you use, and make sure to give us 5 stars. All 3 podcasts, please. 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Favorite us on Anchor. However you want to rate us on all the podcasts, at least rate us. Even if you don't like it, rate it. Let me know. Tell me what you don't like about it. Women Committing Crimes and Secret Spy Sisters are also at my website, www.womencommittingcrimes.com. Please go there. You'll find the podcast, pictures, as well as lists of all the women I plan on having an episode for both podcasts. There's also a suggestions tab where you can let me know which women you'd like to hear about. There's also a place to comment on each of the episodes, so come check it out. You know, be involved. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for an episode you can email me at womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com. I'll even read your email, as I did Maya, or comments on the podcast, unless you would rather remain anonymous, that's fine too. If so, then make sure to express that in your email. Please support this podcast. Go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click the support button. You can make a one-time donation or sponsor on a monthly basis. It would be greatly appreciated. Help me get, you know, some new equipment, make this even better, be able to pay for some of those sound effects. Those sound effects I used, by the way, are old CDs that Doug had from way back when, right? The 90s, 2000s or whatever. So I'm having to put them into Audacity and it's interesting. But I'd like to get some new stuff, so... You can also tweet at Crimes Women or join the Women Committing Crimes Facebook group. I hope to see you all there. All right, now it's time to go into the fishbowl. I'm still doing that. One of these days I'll have the guys come back and pick for me. Remember I did that at the beginning of season 1. I'd like to try that again. But here we go. Going into that bowl. Going to choose a person. All right, got one. All right, we are going to have Susan Newell, a murderess from Scotland, who was the last woman to be hanged in Scotland for capital punishment. Awesome. Right on. See you then. Bye-bye.